The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So the talk is on thinking, with the idea that sometimes it's useful to look at the building blocks rather than the finished structure. Sometimes if you look at the underlying foundation of something, and you can shift and change the foundation in a way that's applicable in many different areas of our life. Or the example that's often given in Buddhism, that if you clip the flowers or the leaves off a plant, it might keep producing more flowers and more leaves and more shoots. But if you pull it up by the root and get down to the base, then it won't sprout up anymore. So with thinking, I think the common relationship most people have with thinking is to the content of their thoughts. And whether it's auditory, kind of words, verbal, auditory kind of thoughts they have, or whether it's they think in images. It's more the content, the stories, the ideas. And these stories and ideas can have a big impact on us because they can affect our mood. We can think certain thoughts and feel kind of get down. Feel other thoughts and we feel up. And it can be up and down throughout the day. And we can also be influenced by other people, by books, by things we see in movies and stuff. The content affects our moods. And so sometimes people wonder, why am I feeling so bad? Why am I so depressed? And maybe it has to do with the kind of thoughts that are being repeated, the content of the thoughts, that over and over again. And sometimes people can get in these amazing mental loops of thinking certain things, and those thoughts then stimulate associated thinking that comes out of that feeling depressed, and then have depressing thoughts make us more depressed and spiral downwards, or angry and spiral out in anger, or fear and spiral out in anxiety, or greed and kind of greedy state, and we get caught in the nature of the greedy thoughts, and then we spiral out in the greed, wanting more and more, can never get enough. But instead of looking at the content of the thoughts, the stories we tell ourselves, if we look at the process of thinking, we can have a whole different relationship to thinking. So the nature of thinking itself. And that can be quite a foreign idea for some people, that you would look behind the content, or through the content, or aside from the content, to look at the very nature of the process of what happens as we're thinking. So in an example that I like to use is if I hold the striker, and the striker is really important to me. This is the most beautiful striker in the world, and I'm very proud that IMC has a striker, and the status of IMC is to really depend on having a really good striker for hitting a bell, and so there's a lot at stake in the striker, and so I'm really focused on the importance of the striker, concerned some of you are going to take it, and so I could hold it really tight. And in holding it so tight, I could be so focused on the striker, I don't notice what it's like to be holding it. But if I shift my attention from the striker to the process of holding it, to how I am holding the striker, then I notice that my fingers are getting tight and tired and sore and numb and, you know, frozen, you know, and I grip my very dear life, my things. But if I focus not on the striker but what it's like to hold it, then I start feeling doesn't feel so good to grip it this way, and so then I begin releasing my grip. I loosen up on it. Or if I notice how I'm holding the striker, I might notice that the how is really fueled by my fear of losing such a precious striker. It might be fueled by the story I tell about how important it is for the identity of IMC and how important we are in the world to have a striker that's really, you know, represents us well. And I'm caught up in this, you know, in an attitude, a belief system around what the striker means. So to step back away from the immediacy of our thoughts and look at the process of thinking, how we're thinking, is a way of, is very helpful, And what it means, it gives us access to a self-understanding that is applicable in many areas of our life, in all kinds of different thinking. We can think about all kinds of different things, but if we learn about the process of thinking, then we can learn to be free in the midst of our thinking, all kinds of thinking, as opposed to trying to resolve or solve the particular thinking problem we're engaged in. So I think often people are trying to figure out, you know, thoughts. We're thinking sometimes for a reason, and so we're trying to accomplish that reason, that purpose of the thinking, and so we're caught sometimes in the maze, in the labyrinth of thoughts because of that. So to look at thinking in a different way, not at the content, not the story, but the process of thinking itself. And so what are some of the things it's possible to notice when you're thinking? One of the things that's possible to notice is the intensity with which we're thinking. Sometimes the intensity is very mild, just, you know, light, easy, kind of just thoughts floating through. And sometimes it's quite intense, the thoughts. And it's one of the things to notice when you're sitting and meditating. Sometimes you can just feel, it feels quite nice to have thoughts just kind of drift through like a breeze. And, you know, they come and go, they're easy, they're not really so caught by it. Other times, every time you let go of a thought, if you're even successful letting go, it comes back with a vengeance. And you feel a tremendous power and pressure to think. Or you might notice that you've heard this idea that meditation, it's nice to let go of thoughts. Maybe you're supposed to, you think, let go of thoughts. But you're not going to do that. You're not at all interested in doing that. Why would you want to do that? You have this really good thinking going on. Or it's really important to think. And so there's pressure, there's beliefs, there's identification, there's desires connected to our thinking. And how intense are those? How strong are those? Are they still so strong that we're not willing to give up our thinking? Are they so strong that we step back from our thinking, we let go, it comes back immediately with a vengeance? Or do we let go and it just floats away and it's, you know, easy come, easy go? What's the intensity of our thinking? To understand that our thinking is quite intense when it is, can also give understanding to how we feel stress. Because a lot of stress that people carry with them is closely connected to how they're thinking, their relationship to their thoughts, how they engage in the thoughts, how they caught up in their thoughts very closely. I think that sometimes in my mind it can feel claustrophobic in there. As I ride my thoughts really close, and every thought is so important and so meaningful, and I'm negotiating my world and myself and everything through thoughts. And other times, thoughts have a role and a place in my life, but they're not claustrophobic at all. I don't feel like I'm bounded by them, caught by them. There's lots of space in the mind, breathing room in the mind. Every thought is not being seen as being significant and consequential. So the question, how are you in relationship to your thinking, is an interesting one. Do you believe every thought you have? Are you averse to every thought you have? Are you embarrassed by every thought you have, or some of them? Do you have a kind of relationship to that world of thinking? Some people feel oppressed by it. I've heard people say they wish they can just cut off their head, because they're so bothered by how their mind is thinking, and thinking mind has a mind of its own, and it's not your mind. And, you know, please stop all that kind of self-deprecating thoughts or angry thoughts or whatever it might be. So there can be aversion and anger and discouragement looking at the mind thinking all the time. Or there can be tremendous there can be tremendous authority invested in our thoughts. We can invest tremendous hope in what thoughts will do for us. Thoughts are going to solve our life, all the different problems. If we just think enough, if we just imagine enough, if we just review enough, if we can just review and redo our past enough times, we'll have a better past. Or certainly the planning mind, always planning, thinking that planning might make a big difference. If I can just plan it out, then I'll be safe. Then everything will be okay. And I've certainly spent a lot of my life planning. Sometimes, it was kind of a shock to me to discover how much of my time I spent planning and my thoughts. One of the times was when I was living in the monastery, where I spent a year anticipating being assigned to a particular job. And so I spent much of that year, whenever I had an idle moment, or not, planning how I would do that job, and all the little details, and planning it all out, and the time came for the assignment of the monastic jobs, and to my surprise, when they announced the jobs, I was not assigned to the job I was expecting. And then the next thought I had was, what was I doing all year? All the time that I was thinking and planning about something that didn't turn out this way, I could have been thinking something else, or not thinking at all. After all, much of that time was spent meditating, so I could have been meditating instead of planning for the job. And I've seen, I've planned all kinds of scenarios for what's going to happen in the future, and been anxious around some of the plans, some of the projections of the future. And one of the things that's helped me was my really poor track record at planning successfully and projecting the future successfully. More often than not, whatever I thought was going to happen didn't happen the way that I thought. And so I learned slowly. But after 10,000, 100,000 times where, I didn't plan out accurately, I didn't project into the future accurately, I began to doubt the authority on my planning thoughts, my planning mind. I began to say, well, maybe not, who knows, but I didn't hold it, I didn't invest so much in that. So we can look at how we think by how our relationship is to thinking, how we hold thinking, and there are some questions you can ask yourself in this regard. You can ask questions like, is it true what you're thinking? You can ask, is it useful what you're thinking? You can ask, is it the best use of your time to be thinking what you're thinking now? There are times in my life where I notice what I'm thinking, and it's innocent enough what I'm thinking, it doesn't seem to be very useful to think about it, or maybe there are more useful things to think about. And so then I'll switch gears. And I think when I was younger, before I practiced meditation, it never occurred to me that I could change what I'm thinking. I just, went along with the ride. And whatever the ride was, it was unquestionable, but it just never occurred to me. Just thoughts just were the nature of reality, how I was thinking. But now I see my thoughts and I say, I think it'd be useful to think about something else and pick up a particular theme. Dharma themes are great. So think about a particular Dharma topic that I want to invest, explore in my life or live in my life or think about, contemplate, be informed by. And I find that when I think particular useful Dharma topics, values I want to live by, I tend to live by those values. I tend to more likely to respond in a better way to the world around me than if I just let my mind get free rein to think whatever it wants. So one of the things to notice around thinking is the physical quality of thinking, the physical sensations that come along with thinking. Now, if you're thinking kind of very lightly and loosely, they might not feel much. But I think most of you probably have experienced some time when you're really intensely involved in thinking something, maybe a problem you have to really, it's important to solve. And your eyes get tense, your forehead kind of furrows up. Maybe your shoulders get tense, parts of your body, muscles kind of get tight up. Because the kind of the intensity of thinking is translated into a certain kind of holding pattern, contraction in their muscles. And, you know, some people get headaches from, you know, how they're kind of, the pressure, the tension connected to thinking. So rather than looking at the content of your thoughts and trying to solve life there, what happens if you look at the pressure or the tension? Where do you feel it? How do you feel it? I feel it often in my area, I guess, behind the skull, inside the skull. I feel it as pressure, tension. Sometimes I feel it with a lot of energy swirling around in there. Other people can feel it more in their eyes. Some people in their neck and shoulders. Some people in the front of their head. Some people, not uncommon to have people feel something in the back, pressure there or something. So then having identified some physical sensation connected to thinking, to then, in a steady, relaxed way, hold your attention on that part of the body. Just kind of, that's part of the value of having some stability and mindfulness, is to be able to keep the attention there. And then there's something interesting to notice. There's a difference between, different feeling inside between holding the attention steady than having the attention being hijacked by our thoughts. Many times when we're involved in our thinking and caught up in our thoughts, it's very easy to live kind of a superficial life. The mind, kind of a superficial part of the brain or the mind, is kind of operating. It's partly why there's a lot of agitation in the mind, but there's a lot of minds jumping around thinking about all kinds of things. But if you want to kind of have access to the deeper qualities of the mind, or the heart, it really helps to hold the mind steady, so it's not jumping around a lot. So simply turn around and find where the sensations of thinking are in the body, and then hold yourself steady there, can begin this process of deepening, opening up. One of the reactions people can have to feeling discomfort around thinking, feeling pressure or tightness or a headache or something, is a feeling that this needs to go away right away. This needs to be fixed. I need to do something. I can't stay here. And part of the wisdom of practice is to be very patient and just hold a steady attention there, as if it's going to be there forever, as if it's okay for it to be there, and not get pulled off into trying to fix it, trying to judge it, trying to make meaning out of it, try to just to hold steady and quiet, as if it's okay to be that way. And what will probably happen is that if you do that for a few minutes, 5 minutes, sometimes, you know, it can be longer sometimes, but not that long, that something begins to change. It's very hard for anything to stay the way it is if you're holding it under the gaze of attention. So if I was holding the striker really, really tight, but if I turned my attention and held a steady gaze on the grip of the striker, chances are I can't hold the grip for much longer. Things will begin to soften and relax. So to turn and just gently, calmly, relaxedly hold the tension in the gaze of awareness, not succumbing to the usual reactive ideas or reactions we have to feeling discomfort if it's uncomfortable. Just kind of being calm, just steady, being with it. This a couple of days ago, I heard a talk by a man who does what's called critical incident stress reduction, stress management, which is a field of psychology that works with communities of people when there's been some crisis, like a suicide, a murder. They go to places of work when a colleague has died, or schools. And he talked about working, he gave an example of working with a second grade class where a second grader in the class had died suddenly. So he went back to talk to the 13 kids in the small class about, you know, help them, support them. And I could say a lot about it, but one of the things he talked about, this process of critical incident stress management, was to start with thinking and then go into feeling, and then at the end, go back up into thinking. So to start with recognizing what people are thinking, what their thoughts are, but then to look deeper into them. And he used the word heart, from head to heart to head again. So one of the things to notice in thinking, especially if thinking is the same thing over and over again, is to look at the emotions that are connected to the thinking. Are there feelings, emotions, attitudes, moods that are connected to the thinking? And often there are. There are, especially if thinking is strong. Some of them might be welcoming emotions, and some of them might be not so welcoming, not so comfortable. So as I like to say, is that often, like the planning mind, more often than not, people spend a lot of time planning. There's often fear or apprehension connected to that. If there is sometimes desire, strong desire thoughts, wanting something, might be connected to a loneliness or a sense of emptiness that people might have. So any emotion at all can be the source or a fuel for what we're thinking about. So rather than focusing on the content, drop down into the body and feel the emotion. And there also it can be hard to hold a steady gaze. It can be hard to just stay there calmly in a relaxed, calm way and just hold in the attention how we're feeling, because of the very strong tendency many people have to want to fix things, to want to judge things, to want to interpret things, to make stories about things. And we make stories about how we feel, and then we're back in the content again, and we make stories. And that's how partly we get into these loops. So to drop into the body and feel, how are we feeling? What's the emotion that's connected to it? Is a very, very useful thing to do with it, with thinking. And to do those two things, to drop into the body and feel the physical aspect of thinking, the pressure, the tension, to drop into the body and feel the emotion that's connected to thinking, is dropping into the process rather than the content. And so that way, if you learn to, that skill to do that, then you can do that for any kind of content at all and drop down and work on those two levels. Part of the advantage of working on those two levels, the physical and the emotional, is that it's often an easier place to begin softening the grip of how we're holding, how we get preoccupied with what we're thinking about. If we're trying to loosen the grip of thoughts by thinking our way out of it, it doesn't work so well. But if we can drop into these more physical and emotional aspects and hold them there, things begin to open, to unravel, to dissolve, to soften more often, I think, than not. And so if you learn that skill, it's a skill that's learned, it's not automatic, it doesn't happen quickly, but it's a skill by repeatedly doing it, dropping down into that and noticing that, to learn how to recognize those parts of the thinking process. Then no matter where you are and what kind of thoughts you have, you don't have to focus on the content. You can focus on the process in order to loosen up the attachment, the clinging, the stuckness we have. But not so that you can only go around as a thoughtless person. So you have some idea, the less thoughts you have, the more spiritual you are. You're not supposed to think at all. But rather to be able to think freely and wisely, to have more choice in how we think and what we think about, to be able to think in more creative ways, more intelligent ways, because our thinking is not very intelligent if we're locked into our thoughts. But if we step back and have a looser, lighter attitude towards it, and are connected to ourselves in a deeper way through our body and our emotion, then there's often much more creativity, more intelligence available in the thinking process that we do. So, one more thing I want to say about thinking that maybe can give you a handle on this, what I'm talking about, feeling it in your body. Because I've asked some people, how do you feel your thoughts in your body when you're thinking? You're thinking in your body. And they just look at me like I'm from Mars. It never occurred to them, and they try and they can't find anything. And then I'll say, sometimes I'll say, well, is it in your little toe? They said, no. Is it in your earlobe? No. And then by kind of starting on the peripheries like that, then usually after a while, I say, well, actually, it's more generally in the area of my head. And I say, is it in your eyebrows? No, it's kind of like deeper in there. And so they begin kind of, it takes a while sometimes to kind of narrow it down, to, because it's such a foreign idea to some people to identify a location. But here's a little exercise that some people find helpful for locating the sensations of physicality or the emotionality of their thinking. If you think in words, kind of auditory kind of thinking, where's the location of the speaker that's projecting the sounds? So, you know, like here at IMC, the speaker is above me, right? So that kind of speaker. Where's the location? Where's a place the sound or the words are coming from? And if the person thinks in images, where are those images being projected? And sometimes it seems like there's a stronger correlation between the verbal thinkers to feel it more in the back of their skull, and for visual thinkers to see it more in the front. I don't know if that's universal or how, but that's what I've kind of noticed. But once you kind of locate kind of a general place where this is happening, then it's possible sometimes to notice then around that or embedded in that, is there any tension, pressure, energy as part of it? Where is the physical energy in your body that comes with thinking? What kind of energy is connected to your thinking? A good, interesting place to see this is to sit quietly sometime in meditation or any place and feel quiet, relaxed, everything is fine, settled. And then out of the blue, your mind thinks about what a disaster your high school prom was. or something like that, you know. And so then, you know, suddenly, you know, she did, he did, and you know, the energy maybe rises, and suddenly you feel like you're sitting up straighter, and like this energy shoots up into the head. And then you say, wow, there's a lot of energy around this topic. But to feel where the energy into your body is very, very interesting. Anything you can do to start using your body as a reference point for your mindfulness practice is very, very helpful, especially for this thing about thinking. So with that as a... as an offering to you, of some, hopefully with the idea of something you can use in your life to look at more carefully, I'd encourage you not to give too much authority to what you think. And certainly don't invest it with authority. Thinking is an important part of our life, but generally it's overrated. So, we have about 10 minutes. I'd like to hear what you think about this talk or questions you might have. You can wait for the mic.
I really like what you said. I really resonated with it because I'm one of those thinkers. And I have tried to get in touch with my body, and that definitely helps. I'm curious to your viewpoint on intentional thinking when you're trying to target something you want to happen, you're putting your intentions forward towards that.
You mean if you want something, so you think about what you want, imagine what you want, intend what you want? I think intention is good. I think having an intention for something and being clear on that intention, setting that intention, can be very, very helpful. But I think it has to be somewhat realistic and not too superstitious. I mean, I intend to win the California lottery. You know, I think that's a little bit superstitious, but I intend to be generous. I think to actually be very clear on intention, like, I intend to be mindful, I intend to go to work today and have kind conversations that are helpful for my colleagues, to really be clear and stand behind that intention. You might not remember, but you're more likely to remember the clear and more direct, fully we state or that intention.
What about intention for good health? Have you seen that play out? Like I've been told that really can help people. I don't know your viewpoint on that.
What does it mean to intend good health? I intend good health for all of you. But how does that help?
If somebody's facing some challenges, rather than go down the negative, that they just try and keep the positive thoughts about their health or their well-being.
Yes, I suppose it could be helpful. I think that what we think has a big impact on our mood, our emotions, and our physiology. And so we have to be a little bit careful of what we think. So certainly part of mindfulness practice is teaching us is how to track our thoughts, know what's going on, know the impact, and then have the ability to let go of those thoughts that are not useful, to recognize what's not useful, to recognize the cost or the effect. But even useful thoughts, this is why this talk today, to look at the process of thinking different from the content is important, because sometimes the content is angelic. Sometimes the content can be like the most wonderful thing in the world. Of course, there should be no problem with this kind of thinking. But a person might be gripping those thoughts for dear life. You know, there might be so much tension around having those thoughts. So to soften and relax. So the practice teaches us to relax and to soften the grip of the mind. And if the grip of the mind is not there, then it's possible to have negative thoughts, and they don't have any impact on us. They have impact. These thoughts have impact on us mostly because of how we relate to them and how strong we're connected and invested in them. So the practice teaches to let go, and then and then to focus on something that's more useful and uplifting. I think is a nice thing to do within reason. Sometimes it does come along with superstitious thinking. Sometimes it comes along with ideas that we're responsible for our health, and if only I think certain thoughts, then my cancer will go away. So, you know, it's all up to my thinking. And I think it can be overdone, that kind of emphasis on the role of thinking. But certainly we can have, what we think, as I said earlier, has a big impact on our stress levels. And if we can think in ways that are not stressful, think of ways that bring us joy and well-being, I think it's helpful.
Thank you.
But part of the danger of positive thinking is that some people are too quick to do it, and they do it as an overlay on top of their what's going on, and so there's all this negativity and all this difficulties going on underneath, churning away, and they're kind of ignoring it because they're kind of forcing themselves to have positive thoughts and think good thoughts, and again, it can be a lot of people overly do this positive thinking things. It can just end up being a lot of surface thoughts that are done very furiously and desperately, and the depth of what's really going on for them is untouched. So I think it's better. I don't know if it's better, but I think one of the useful ways to go about this is to do this process, mindfulness process of dipping down into the body, dipping down to the emotions, and really seeing what's there, and really kind of trying to resolve what's there in some deeper way, and then from that deeper place, to have more positive thoughts, I think, is much more effective than only then going around positive, 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 positive. You know, just got to think faster. Okay, I saw someone in front of you here.
I was wondering how.
Hold the mic.
Please. Oh, I'm sorry. Can you guys hear me now?
Yeah.
I was wondering how you work. With the mindfulness practice with like people who have suffered some kind of trauma. So going into the body and feeling where the emotion behind the thought is a difficult thing.
Yes.
So I was curious how you work with people like who have gone through some type of trauma and sitting in the body and doing that kind of deeper locating is very difficult. Like what techniques do you use?
Yeah, I mean, that's such a huge topic that I can't really do it justice in a few minutes. And when it's, sometimes when it's people are, have a very strong trauma, it might suggest they go work with a trauma therapist. And the trauma therapy is a variety of different kinds, but they have all kinds of skills, techniques that they train people in how to work with trauma in ways that sometimes are comparable to what we do or similar to what we do in mindfulness, but are more focused for that purpose. So sometimes it's better, better for me not to offer much because it's better to get professional help. Sometimes one of the things I like to convey to people, anybody, including someone who has trauma issues, is that we're supposed to become our own teachers, which means we're supposed to monitor ourselves and take the feedback that comes back to help us know how to go forward, what to do next. So if we pay attention to something, when say there's some anxiety, and we bring our attention to the body and anxiety, and the consequences of that, we feel more scared in a way that seems to re-trigger the trauma or open up wounds in a way that are too difficult to be with. Having learned that, then we learn, this is not useful. And rather than trying again and again to go in there and do this kind of instruction, then we learn from it, this is not useful, I think I need some other help, I need a different approach. And so then there might be a different approach to be taken. There are different approaches for mindfulness. Simply, sometimes when emotions are very difficult or feelings are very difficult, sometimes it's helpful not to get too close to the emotion. And so some people actually imagine themselves standing 100 yards away. Imagine they're far away, or a bird up in the sky looking down at them, and they can feel the fear or the hurt or something, but they feel at such a distance because, sometimes Vipassana teachers will say, bring your attention right into the middle of what you're feeling. But for someone with trauma, that you should go, don't go in the middle. Be 100 yards away. And then it's safe to kind of feel it, and then you can be with it in a useful way. Sometimes to spend very brief times with something. Maybe it's useful to feel the pain, but to do it just for a couple of seconds, and then pay attention to something completely different and get stabilized again, and then open to it and develop some. One of the things that's very important for trauma, people with trauma, is to develop confidence in their ability to pull themselves out of it. The strong, spiraling feelings that can come up, panic attacks, hurt, all kinds of things. And so do it in very, very small steps. Open up to that part, maybe, of your life for a moment, or just for a moment, and then clearly pull out. Go for a walk, do whatever you need to do. And then you have confidence in those little steps you can do, and then with that confidence you can take a step closer. But the sense of confidence is very important, that you have some control over how far you go in and how far you can and how quickly you can come out. So those are just a few little checklist kind of things. It's an important issue for many people. Okay. So there's a tea today. Which I said, how nice. And so the community and getting to know, being around other people in a way to practice and been around the practice is often a very useful thing. And those of you who are new, particularly want to welcome you to our center. And perhaps as we stop now, and those of you who stay for the tea, maybe encourage people to stay. Maybe you can turn to someone near you and say hello, especially if you've been here a while and you notice someone near you you don't know, or might be new. Say hello and introduce yourself. Thank you.